WFF with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
It's Wednesday, the 10th of February. There's still no snow.
No snow in Cork either, God love it. Anyway, coming up on Game On tonight, we speak to French rugby legend Philippe Saint-André.
Blanco on the counter-attack. This is typical adventure. Philippe Sella. And notice how the backs anticipate this great interplay to Cambarabero. Unsettling England, and Cambarabero's recovered it, sees the man galloping up. It's Saint-André, it depends on the bounce, and he's under the post. One of the most sensational tries Twickenham's ever seen.
I think we might need to ban commentary with crowd noise until it comes back.
Such a great try, that.
Unbelievable. Irish hurdler Sarah Lavin discusses her preparations for the European Indoor Championships in Poland.
This time we're away, and Maroglio makes a good start for Italy. She has the lead at the moment, but Herska predictably is with her. These two getting away. Maroglio is getting away. The crowd is rising, and Maroglio is going to take the gold.
And Mark Langan takes a look at the main stories in European football.
And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo! Sensational!
It all sounds good.
It really does. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. There is one game ongoing in the FA Cup. Man City are leading Swansea 1-0 with Walker getting the goal there, and three then will kick off a little bit later on. Leicester, Brighton, Sheffield United, Bristol City and Everton and Tottenham. Now, Donegal, today Ireland rugby captain Johnny Sexton spoke of his disappointment with the repeat incidents of inaccurate reporting of his medical history. So a neurologist who had dealt with him before told a French radio station that he believed the Dubliner had sustained around 30 concussions during his career to date, and he also expressed concern about him rushing back into action this weekend. Now, he has since apologised, but Michael Corcoran did ask Johnny Sexton today what he thought of these comments. Let's hear from him.
I thought there was a patient-doctor confidentiality. I'm pretty sure that exists in the world, and I just can't get over the fact that someone thought it was appropriate to just come out of nowhere and just start saying things that weren't even accurate. That's the most hurtful thing. So I've made a statement. released a statement, and that's all I have to say on the matter. We've been here before, and we could sit here talking about it for 20 minutes, you know what I mean? But I'm never going to win out of it, because last time I did it, this happened twice before, and I tried to give facts and defend myself, and then I'm in the papers for being selfish and not looking after the younger players coming through the system, and people accusing me of just looking after myself. So I can't win. So I'm not talking about it for the rest of the press conference, if that's okay. And I just want to focus on France, or you can talk about Wales, you know. And I mean that with the greatest respect to you guys, but that's the way it is.
Hi, Johnny. It's good to see you. Can I ask how you are health-wise and everything after the game against Wales in Cardiff at the weekend?
Yeah, I'm okay. Obviously, picked up a few bangs, a few bumps and bruises, but by and large, I've been good at the start of the week, and just doing the return to play protocols at the moment.
How surprised are you at the interest there is, both in Ireland and indeed in France, in your health and where you are in terms of concussion and everything like that, and return to play protocols?
Yeah, I'm pretty saddened and shocked by the inaccurate reports that were thrown out yesterday, I think it was. It's very frustrating, and you know, for me, I just think it's totally inappropriate that a doctor that I have seen many years ago now felt it was appropriate to come out and talk to whoever it was and say those things. It's inaccurate and highly inappropriate, and I'm pretty disappointed, but for me, I'm so used to it that it's almost like water off a duck's back to me. But for my wife and mum and stuff like that, it's very very upsetting. But that's the world we live in, and I don't really want to talk too much more about it. Like I said, it was inaccurate, and just got to focus on this week and the return to play. If I don't pass one of those stages, I won't play. If I do pass them, well, then I'll be fit to play, and whether I play or not is down to the coaches then, and that's the way we've always done it, and I trust the medic guys here. They look after us incredibly well, and I will continue to trust them.
Now, just to be very clear there as well, we did put that clip of Jonathan Sexton talking about his reaction first, and then Michael didn't follow up after he'd said, I don't want to talk about it anymore with his question. Michael wouldn't do that.
No, he wouldn't do that. But Michael Corcoran, probably the only person that could probably get away with it because he's so liked within the rugby circles. It's my first time hearing it, Marie, and the biggest thing that jumped out for me was when he mentioned Laura and his kids and his family, because Johnny's resilient, he's tough, he's used to this kind of dealing with these kind of things that happen, but it's your family that get rocked, and when they read stuff like that, it really can upset them and put them out, and you think of them when you hear stuff like this. Obviously, look, I've been privileged and lucky to be in the environment. I've always felt that you don't go out unless you're right, and look, I know there is brilliant, thankfully there is incredible awareness at the moment around concussion, and there probably does need to be strides taken to improve, but Johnny said and will not go out on the pitch unless he's right, and it is very disappointing that his private health matters are being discussed even by us now.
Yeah, it does feel like it's none of our business, to be fair. Okay, we're going to move on from this, Donica, because we have our competition today.
Oh, very good. Yes, we have a brilliant competition all week with thanks to our super sponsors, Green Farm. So you could win a hamper that contains all the Green Farm products, which includes their latest on-the-grow range. These are these beautiful little chicken bites that come in three different flavours. I highly recommend the chili one. Quite nice. They're 100% natural, they're high in protein, and they come with a little handy little skewer so you don't get your fingers messy when you're eating them on the go. And tonight's prize is a fantastic New Year's fitness hamper full of all the goodies. There's a Fitbit in there, there's a dumbbell water bottle, there's a brilliant journal or diary for keeping track of your training, and there is a class speaker so that you can work out on the go as you eat your brilliant Green Farm products. So, Marie,
I nearly kicked the training back into gear again just so I can start writing in the journal.
That's it. All you need is a journal.
So, for your chance to win, all you need to do is answer the following question. Ireland hosts which team in the Six Nations this Valentine's Day? I didn't realise it was Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes.
So, text the word green followed by your answer and name to 51552 and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. And as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply, so see 2fm.ie for more. Now we are going to turn our attention to football, particularly European football. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us. But Mark, before we get into all the comings and goings in Europe, I'd like to start off with the news today that Derry City announced the signing of Manchester City Scholar of the Year midfielder Joe Hodge on a 6-month loan deal. And I've seen Joe Hodge play before. He is such an exciting player. What an addition to the League of Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. The City sort of academy is absolutely churning out unbelievable talent at sort of all levels at the moment. So, you know, to be Scholar of the Year is definitely an achievement that's difficult, for any player to achieve. If you think to a couple of years ago, Eric Garcia was named the Manchester City Under 18 Player of the Year. He's now playing for City tonight against Swansea in the FA Cup. He's almost certainly off to Barcelona in the summer. So, that's the kind of quality that comes through at City. Obviously, players develop at different ages, and not all of them enjoyed loan spells. Somebody like Harry Kane had some very difficult ones as well as some positive ones. Troy Parrott had a difficult one at Millwall, hopefully the one at Ipswich will be better suited to him. So you can never be entirely sure how it's going to work out, particularly for young players, but certainly an exciting signing for Derry, a playmaker that I think everyone's going to enjoy watching.
Mark, is this something we could see more of? Man City you loaning out to Derry City. We've seen ties with Everton, with Sligo. Could Premier League clubs start looking to the Irish teams to bring on their young talent?
Yeah, I think this has been mentioned as a possibility for sure. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were more Premier League teams looking to do this in the future. I think the way that academy football is at the moment, not everybody's convinced it's the right way for players to develop. If you think Pep Guardiola is adamant that the best way would be for his sort of under 23 team to compete in the EFL would be the best way for them to develop. And maybe that's true, but it would probably be to the detriment of the EFL overall, and it would be a hugely controversial move. But it's something that happens in Spain and in Germany and in other European leagues. So with an unsatisfactory under 23 system at the moment, I think that there are a lot of, I suppose, like feeder leagues, if you like, where sort of these Premier League teams will be looking to sort of get their players out, and Brexit's going to make things all the more difficult, I think, in some respects as well.
Well, we had the Shamrock Rovers second team playing in the first division last season as well, and that went okay, I think. So, Mark, just in terms of the Champions League, which is just around the corner, the last 16 first legs next week, it seems that a lot of them are going to be played now in neutral venues because of COVID-19 restrictions.
Yeah, and this, I think, is, I was talking there about unsatisfactory in terms of the under-23s. I mean, this is, you know, Europe's premier club competition. Really, the goalpost being moved in terms of, you know, what's supposed to be sort of happening, really, how the competition works. You know, you've got the Leipzig against Liverpool game, Gladbach against Manchester City have both been moved. Also, the Atletico Madrid against Chelsea is now being played in Italy. Sociedad against Manchester United. Similarly, also, Arsenal against Benfica, we've got games that are taking place in neutral venues there as well. So it's not great. I'm not somebody that's sort of been completely sold on sort of how UEFA are getting their competitions finished. Their kind of belief is that we've got to get them done any old way, and you know, we'll kind of deal with the consequences afterwards. I think it's a real big shame as well. I mean, you could argue that home advantage isn't worth that much at the moment anyway, but I still think that there is some kind of home advantage, even if there's no supporters there, to playing at home, and the lack of travelling and just sort of home comforts, if you like, of knowing the pitch inside out. So the goalposts have been moved very late here, but I think the clubs, as well as UEFA, are just in the mode of, we've got to get this competition sort of done, and that there's no sort of ways around it at the moment.
It's gone a bit quiet about the Euros. I know that they were definitely trying to keep it at a 12-city venue competition. Do you think that's still going to be the case? And when will we get confirmation of where exactly it's going to be held?
I think that, I mean, privately, that there's sort of been suggestions that UEFA would, you know, love to have it at 12 cities, but they've kind of been working on many contingencies that maybe see a couple of those, you know, maybe even as many as four drop out. I think it's really difficult to put a time frame, and I know everybody wants to know these things, but I think in the last year, if there's one thing we've learned from this, is that things change very quickly, and you know, what you think is sort of safe in March might not be safe in June, and I think they will leave it as late as possible. I think the amount of fans that are going to be allowed into stadiums is going to play some kind of part in that, and I think that the fact that there's not going to be full stadiums probably does give them a little bit more wiggle room, really, just in terms of you know, making these decisions quite late. I've got friends, actually, I was speaking to today, Wales supporters, that have given up their tickets for games in Baku just in case that the game goes ahead and they can't get there and they can't get their money back. So they've reluctantly just sort of accepted that they won't be going to that game. And I think a lot of fans have been put in similarly difficult positions. But from UEFA's point of view, there's a lot of money involved in sort of taking games away from cities, and there's been a lot of merchandise put into it, and a lot of effort as well that's gone into it. So I think they will try to give the 12 cities as long as possible to prove that they're able to host these games.
Mark, we might trip around Europe, and we'll start at La Liga with Zinedine Zidane. He was a bit unhappy that Real Madrid aren't getting the respect he feels they deserve.
Yeah, I mean, Zidane actually was in a press conference the other day where he started calling out journalists, which always feels like you're only a couple of steps away from the sack when somebody as powerful and as famous as Zidane starts arguing with the guys at Marca and various other Spanish media outlets. I think he's right in as much as, you know, this is a guy that's won the Champions League back-to-back-to-back 3 years in a row, and he's won La Liga last year, but that doesn't count for much when you're Real Madrid and you're not playing well this season, so that they've had far too many defeats this year. And I think he is being disrespected because he's an absolute legend of the club, both as a player and as a manager. And the people, he basically said, you know, tell me to my face if you think I should leave the club. And nobody spoke up then, but the column inches have been filled with speculation that maybe his time at the club will come to an end at the end of the season. They'll look for a fresh manager to take them on. I mean, the football's not been very good this year. They have had a lot of injuries. They won 2-0 last night, and they won at the weekend. So that pressure's been eased a little bit, but it's still not good enough, really, for Real Madrid.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that. Mark Langdon, thanks so much for joining us. And Manchester City still hold that 1-0 lead against Swansea, with it coming close to halftime.
Quadruples on, Marie.
Right, let's take a very, very quick break, and then we're back with rugby.
Game on UFM with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, to try to keep some balance during the Six Nations, we are looking to get the opposition's view. Philippe Saint-André has done it all in French rugby, but on the pitch and in the coaching box. He didn't just grace a rugby pitch, he absolutely lit it up. And we're delighted he joins us now. Philippe, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Nice to speak with you.
Yes, I must be honest, Philippe, this is an incredible pleasure for me because as a young boy watching your French team play rugby was incredible, and the moment that stands out is your try in 91 against England.
But it was long time ago. It was old school rugby, but now, you know, we carry on to watch some great game, and I'm looking forward, like all the fans of Ireland, to watch the game of the Six Nations between Ireland and France this weekend.
Yeah. Philippe, I know you've got back you're coaching at Montpellier, but just as a rugby man, the type of rugby you played in the 90s, that French team, that flair, the keeping the ball alive from your own goal line, do you look at rugby now the way we're kicking so much and nearly hope that we go back to playing the way you did?
Yeah, but you know, he was different. He was not professional. I think the team was not as well organized, and now also I think the rules improve a lot. You know, to be honest, when you look in 1991, the lineout was a mess. The scrum was a mess. Now it's much more clean, and the prop as quick as the winger. So I think now it's more, you know, it's a lot of strategy, it's a lot of, you need to be patient, you need to wait the opportunity, but it shows that at the moment, and also with the new rules in the rec, we see a lot of kicking game in each game at the moment.
We often look back at old games with rose-tinted glasses, but for you, which is the more enjoyable watch, the game now or the game back when you played?
No, because, you know, I don't want to be nostalgic, or I don't want to be an old-school man and say, oh, I was better in my time. So I think, you know, life moves on, and I think you need to adapt. You know, I enjoy so much to play when I was young and players, but you know, after I had the opportunity to be a coach, to be a manager, this year I was director of rugby of Montpellier Mall, about the business, and now I am back on the pitch. But you need to adapt. You know, the players are more professional, they are GPS, there are a lot of analysts. The staff team, you know, you have 15 or 18 people, so all the small details are very, very important. So, you know, I think I had a great opportunity to play for my country for 69 times, to be the captain, I think 34 times, but I still love rugby and I enjoy to watch the game at the moment, you know.
Are the players more demanding now, do you think? Are they kind of expecting more of coaches and setups?
Yes, in one way. The only thing sometimes, you know, it's sometimes I ask to my players, I say, did you watch Wales, Ireland, or did you watch France, Italy? And half of the guys say, no, we didn't watch the game because we were busy or because our rugby is our job, so we want some time off. And I still feel that when you are professional players, you know, it's a job, but it's a passion, and you need to be desperate to learn and to watch some games and to improve. But to be honest, when you coach players, very often the best players are the players who watch all the game and love completely the rugby matter.
That's certainly the case. You're right. The students of the game really seem to excel. The ones that are watching everyone's play, and there's no one better to watch at the moment than France. I think they're certainly back. But Philippe, with your role with Montpellier, maybe you could tell us. We've seen it's like everything is in line in French rugby now. There was a wrestle before between the clubs, but it seems like both the international team and the clubs are working together for the betterment of the game in France.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it was when I was the French coach in 1990, in 2015, and we lost against New Zealand in quarterfinal, and we said that it's impossible to carry on like this and to be a war between French Federation and club. And since the last 3-4 years, each club in top 14, we need to pick 16 French players in the team sheet each week. So all the club improve a lot about the young player, about the academy. The French team won the last 2 World Cup under 20, and you can see that now, you know, we have players like Dupont, like Ntamack, so many great players, and they play each week for the club and they play for the country, and I think it's why the French team are back in stage, you know, because it was a big work for the French rugby for the last 5-6 years.
You mentioned some of the big name players there for France, and obviously we're all wondering how Ireland are going to get on against them at the weekend, and Dupont is one of them that you mentioned. How special is he, and how do you think Ireland could get to grips with him?
To be honest, he's very, very special, because each week, you know, with Toulouse or with the French team, he makes a difference. You know, he's skillful, he's strong, he's quick. And he's confident, and he looks around him. You know, everybody are amazing. I think you had Audrey Scull, you know, a few years ago with Ireland, and he was so great, and all the players around him was amazing. And I think Antoine Dupont is exactly the same specimen. You know, he's doing this each week with Toulouse and with the French team against Italy against last week. I think he scored one try. He passed twice for a try. He kicked one for one other try. I think he makes 70% or 80% of the try. I think it's something very, very special. But also, I think we have a French team well balanced, well coached by Fabien Galthié and all this staff. And we have also a lot of talents with a winger, with a center. I have three players from Montpellier, you know, in the squad. Momo Awa, the tight end, Paul Villemse, the back row, and Arthur Vincent, the center. And he's young, he's just 22. He was the captain of the winning under 20 3 years ago. And he's one of my key players in Montpellier, and he's just 22. And I think this is a difference in this French team. It's at the moment the young players are the star of their team because they are professional, because they are skillful, and because they are built, you know, to be a great rugby players.
Philippe, you mentioned some of the players there, the Teddy Thomas, the Vakatows, the Dupont's, and they're incredible players now, but you're right, they're young, aren't they? And you mentioned the Under-20s World Cup. Do you think they're going to get even better when it comes to the home World Cup in 2013, or do these players need to win now, win Six Nations now, or is it all building towards the World Cup?
I think it's the idea of this... Of these players, but to be honest, you know, these young players, they won the World Cup under 20 twice with their club. Dupont Toulouse, he win the French league already. They are built. They have the winning habit, you know, and I think this makes a huge difference between the other generation. Or French rugby was struggling for 10 years and the French team was losing all the time. And this new generation, they are scared of nothing. They are very professional. They work hard. They believe in themselves. And I think this make a big difference. But after, when you look at the French team, they keep a lot also. They don't take any risk in their 30 meters. But after the difference, they have so much talent and they are so quick. And in each turnover, you know, they punish the other team. You know, in November, I think each time they had opportunity to score, they score 90-95% of the time when they have the opportunity. And this makes the difference between a good team and a great team. You know.
Mm. The big learning for me watching France over the last maybe year or so is the attack is brilliant, but the discipline in their defence in terms to do the right job at the right time. And I know Sean Edwards gets an awful lot of credit for that, and he deserves it, but it must be a behaviour from the club level up that defence has improved within the league that leads to the national team going better.
Yeah, exactly. Sean Edwards, I think, did a lot, but also, you know, the new structure in French rugby, before the players was playing each week with the club and they were coming in the club for national team just 5 days before. And they were going back between two games in the Six Nations. And now, since 3 years, it's completely finished. They are together a lot, you know, they don't play as much with their club. They have a big pre-season in summer, and they are not allowed to play with the club until September. Than before, the guys was playing 11 months here. So I think also the structure and the organization of French rugby changed completely for the last 4 or 5 years. And for this, you know, to be disciplined, you need to be fit and to keep your brain and your mind switch on all the time. And the guys are strong in defense. They are disciplined because they are ready to play international rugby. Then it was not the case a few years ago.
There were reports in French newspapers today from a couple of very high-profile neurosurgeons, and they seem to be alarmed by suggestions that Johnny Sexton could be on track to start for Ireland. Jonathan Sexton was then out in front of the media today, and he said that he's saddened and shocked by the inaccurate reports that were thrown out in France. He said it's inappropriate to come out and talk to whoever it was. It's inaccurate, inappropriate, and he's very disappointed. Does he have a point?
Yeah, I think it's very, very difficult case, because what he showed in France and in top 14, it's very, very reglementation. If one player of Montpellier go off during the game, he's a number 4 doctor, but he's a doctor not from the club, not from the league, one other doctor. And after, the guy is not allowed to play for nearly 10 days or 2 weeks. So I think it's because the rules are different than at the moment in France, it's a lot of discussion about this. But if your captain and your fly half played this weekend, it's because he's okay, because he's fit, because the medical of the Irish team decides and he's fit to play. The only thing, I am more open-minded because I worked 10 years in England and I know that the regulation, you know, in UK or in Ireland can be completely different than in France. But in France, the regulation of the knock-on and about the commotion are very, very strict, and it's not anymore in our resort. You know, you are a coach, but if one guy go off, he's not allowed to play the week after. I have an example. We played last week, and I have one player finish the game, and he was okay. But Monday arrived, and he had a headache, and he couldn't sleep very well the Monday. And one doctor out of the club see him, and he's out of action for 10 days. So I think it's for this, and it's a lot of comment in France. But if Sexton played this weekend, I think it's because he will be fit, and because was the name, and because him and the doctor of Ireland feels that he's okay to play, and I don't think so. We need to have any comments about this.
And he's obviously very annoyed that the neurologist spoke to the French radio station about him and said that he thought he'd sustained around 30 concussions during his career to date. Do you think it's right that the neurologists or doctors are speaking about his medical history out in public like that?
But you know, you work in radio, in media, and you know that it's opportunity about speaks about some things. I will not say dodgy, but speaks about some things very important. Will do the buzz. So it's very difficult. Me, when I am a coach, what I know just is the health and safety of my players are very, very important and are the key, because it's my job then to look after the guys that I'm coaching. But it's for this. If Sexton plays this weekend, it's because he will be fine and then he will be 100%, and it will be not a problem for me. After, I am not a surgeon, I am not a doctor, so it's difficult for me to comment about some things. It's not my job.
We know your job as a coach, and you would have watched the Ireland-Wales game. What areas do you think France will target from that? It was a very physical game, but where would France have seen maybe chinks that they could exploit in Ireland's play?
I think, you know, when you analyse a team, but when the team plays 14 against 15 for nearly 70 or 80% of the time, it's difficult to analyze about the defense because you are one player less. But what is sure is the Irish team was very impressive after 14 against 15. They were very strong. They carry well the ball. They were good in set piece, also 7 against 8. I think the only thing, you know, they missed this kick in the end of the game to not win the game. But the only thing the French team will know, that it will be very hard and it will be very tough, and they will need to be very disciplined. But after, when you look at the French team, you know, they will kick a lot also, because they don't want to take any risk in their half. They will be patient, they will wait. But after, you know, if Ireland leave a little bit of space about the French team, and the guys, they will take it. And after, you know, when they go forward, they have great skills, they can offload a lot. And I think it's what is difficult to stop the French team. I think it's difficult to read them in attack, because it's so much talent anybody can take a responsibility, break a tackle. And after, when this team go forward, it's very, very difficult to stop them.
You obviously have an interest anyway in Irish rugby players and potentially the next generation, because you're running some rugby academies this summer. Tell us about them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have a PSA academy, and we are very, very strong in Ireland, in England, and in France. And, you know, we have a lot of great coach, you know, Irish coach, French coach, English coach. And for me, it's very important to develop the player, to develop the skills of the players, to improve. So we're doing on PSA Academy a lot of camps. Last year, a lot was cancelled with COVID. But, you know, we're looking forward for this year. And I know that we had a lot of booking in Ireland. Last year was cancelled, but we will have a lot of venue. And I think you just need to go to our website and on WWPSA Academy, and you will see it's a great opportunity for the young kids. We teach them to be a good boy and also to be a good rugby players.
And good fun. I was lucky enough to be in teens when the Irish group were over and they were training. I met Johnny Murphy and they looked like they were having a great time.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny Murphy is a lot in our camp. And also what we're trying to do on our academy is also to mix, you know, different nationality. When we are in team, we have sometimes 12, 15 different nationality: Irish, English, French, but also Spanish, Hong Kong, Italian, and you know, also the mix of different nationality. It's amazing because they play rugby, they enjoy themselves, but also they build friendship, you know, for the future. And we must not forget that rugby is also this, you know, it's to meet people and to build a relation and to be a better man in your life, you know.
Absolutely, and very important message. Philippe, thank you so much for joining us. Let's hope for a brilliant game, maybe an Irish win, but loads of tries like yours in 91.
I hope so, but I am sure it will be a great game.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Manchester City have come out of the blocks at halftime, all guns blazing, and they have scored two goals to make it 3-0 against Swansea. So Kyle Walker got that first one, followed by Raheem Sterling on 47 minutes, and then Gabriel Jesus on 50 minutes. Now, I have to say, I was delighted and proud, and I felt very emotional at the weekend when I saw that Sarah Lavin had achieved the qualifying time for the European Indoor Championships with a very impressive third place finish in the 60 hurdles at the World Indoor Series Silver Meet in the Czech Republic, and she joins us now. Sarah, I have to say, I'm so glad to see you back.
Thank you so much. Goodness, that was a great intro.
Well, it's been a journey for you.
Definitely it has. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been dark days between just a series of different things, and I was delighted, I suppose, to do that race in particular, because it was a silver meeting, so that's worth good points for Olympic qualification, to come third there, and obviously to run the qualifying time for Europeans. Yeah, I was delighted.
So is it about 7 years since you were kind of back at the level again?
Yeah. I mean, my PB was 8:25 from 2014. I did it the exact same time in 2016, and actually got an invite to the World Indoors, but decided to turn it down at the time to focus on Rio and to try and get qualifying, and then fractured my foot. So it was one of those things that I was like, did I tempt that fate? But I didn't break any mirror, I don't think of. But yeah, no, it was definitely seven long years.
So
and a lot
now,
of patience.
3 times in 5 days, you've lowered your PB.
Yeah, it's great, you know, and hopefully we can go again. And obviously I'm enjoying the moment. It's been long enough coming, but I suppose Derville, she was a world champion in the event, so she set the bar pretty high, and that's always nice to put a bit of perspective on everything, and yeah, just keep working hard, keep doing what we're doing, and keep hopefully going in that direction, you know.
Sarah, what do you need to do now to qualify for the Olympics?
So, yeah, this is like trying to explain this to people in England at the moment.
Are we going to need an abacus?
Honestly, I think that they've complicated the process so much. So, they used to always be standards for the Olympics, and you just run your standard. They used to have an A and a B standard. This year, they've actually changed the whole system. So they've made standards really, really difficult, so that they're kind of Olympic final standard. And then they want everybody else to come in through a world ranking system. So, you're looking at Thomas Barr, Ciarán McGeehan would hit the standard, and then most other Irish athletes would be looking at, getting through the world ranking system. So, at the moment, for a hurdle, it's 40 places. So, I climbed 10 places just last week. So, I'm gone to 50th, and there's definitely two races that I need to improve on, because I've got no performance points. Basically, doing a good race at a particularly high grade meeting gives you additional points on top of your performance points, which is why doing it in Ostrava last week was great to hit it right then. But it's complicated, and obviously there's another 10 places to go between now and the end of June, and it can swing both ways. There's very little difference going up and down, and it'll be, I'd say, right to the wire. Exciting, though, if you're watching on.
The delay probably suits you as well, Sarah, the fact that we didn't have it last year, and now you're hitting that form, and it's not that far away, all going to plan.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I mean, this time last year, I had a bit of a bad injury to the ankle, so it was very unlikely, to be honest. If the Olympics had gone on last year, I would have needed a miracle and to get that extra year, and I suppose the extra year of really good training under my belt, and hopefully everything will go to plan.
So yeah. You mentioned there that the 7 years of being out, but the improvements that you're making now, what would you say to any sports person that's been struggling to make improvements, because that can be a lonely road?
Yeah, it's really, everyone wants to be, I think that was probably the hardest thing of becoming a successful junior. Nothing anybody loves more in Irish sport is a young prodigy. And then when things go south, they kind of can be quite a lonely spot, and particularly, I suppose, in an individual sport. So I think just keep going, self-belief, inner belief, and it's the same, I suppose, not even just in sport, isn't it? I mean, if you have a dream, just keep, you know in your heart and soul what you're capable of. And I guess I just always kept telling myself I had proof of my talent. I was a very successful junior, so there was no reason why I couldn't be a successful senior, and that my time would come. And just getting everything right, I suppose, injuries and there's some things go out of your control, there's some things that are in your control, and you might make poor choices, I suppose, when you're young, and that you might make a bit better as you get older. But I think it's a journey, and to be honest with you, I don't know what I change much, which is probably a bit bizarre thing to say, but I think it shapes you hugely as an individual as well, the harder times.
And your coach, Noelle, is it?
Yeah.
She's been with you from the start of your journey. How important is that relationship, even coaching aside, just the friendship that's built up?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, she honestly, it's like on the child that she didn't give birth to, but somehow got landed when I was talking about it. And that's no disrespect, my parents are amazing, but it's a different type of relationship, obviously, with Noelle. We have to be very close. I mean, there's times we have to spend an absurd amount of time with each other, and I'm sure there's times she's wanted to kill me, and we've laughed and cried and all the rest and in between throughout the years, which is what's kind of a really good, healthy relationship. There's no way I think you'd make it through a tough few years without someone that's really stable, and she's definitely been the constant, I suppose, in the good days and the bad days, and I'm very lucky for that.
So what's your setup like now, Sarah? Are you at home in Limerick, or where are you?
I am actually in Dublin training in the NIA tomorrow, which is great, because I suppose that's one thing, hurdles is such a technical sport, you can't, if it's snowing outside, it's not great. It's 8 seconds and you're trying to keep everything intact as best as possible.
Running in wellies.
Yeah. So I had my, had done my day's quarantine and got my negative test. So due in tomorrow to the indoor arena, and Noelle will come up. Huge sacrifice on her behalf. I mean, it's easy for me. It's not a sacrifice for me. It's an absolute choice, and it's a dream. And for her, she's doing it for someone else's dream, which is just amazing. You know, I think people underestimate, especially if you're coming from sports like rugby. No offense to anyone, but like just the commitment that comes in from not just from the coaches, you know, from the whole outside perspective. And I suppose even just as an athlete, like the last 2 weeks have been mad. Like you've been trying to navigate yourself through Vienna. Well, we had to Vienna, we had to go via Amsterdam. You need additional tests to get in via Amsterdam, sort out tests over there to get back into Ireland, get in through tests. And you're doing all this yourself. Like the Ostrava meet was great. They did organise two of the tests, but like that's been 8 tests in the last 10 days, which is just huge. You have to be very independent. I suppose that's just athletics, isn't it? And yeah, just having that, you know, Noelle has to buy. Without Noelle, you couldn't do it, to be honest with you, because it's a huge buy-in from her on her behalf also.
Tonica, this probably isn't a good time to share the story about the time you got lost at the airport.
I just want to say to you, Sarah, I used to find it very easy, just follow all the green tops, but that's why I didn't play in an individual sport.
Like,
so.
I was biting my tongue, yeah.
So the next few weeks, Sarah, what have you got coming up?
So I was actually supposed to go to Ghent this weekend, but with getting the standard, I suppose I just weighed up the whole COVID thing, and the Athletics Ireland have organised the meet, so Nationals got cancelled, and they've put on a micro meet in Abbottstown next weekend. So unfortunately it's gone from, say, a D grade to an E grade, which it have implications for world ranking points, but at the same time amazing that we can compete in our home country and without the risk of travel. So fair play to everyone getting that over the line. And then I'm on a waiting list for another race. Again, this is like the life of an individual athlete, Donica. You end up messaging all these meet directors basically trying to get into the high quality races, and your time speaks basically, and you're looking at 8 lanes or 16 if there's heats of the best girls in Europe, and everyone's vying for a spot. So you sometimes just have to wait till last minute and go with it, you know. So if that comes through, great. And then European Indoors is in Turin, I think it's actually Turin, because it's not Turin in Italy, it's Turin in Poland. And it's the 5th to the 7th of March is the European Indoors. And I mean, there's amazing athletics performances at the moment by Irish athletes. I'm not sure if you saw Andrew Coskren last night finishing 5th at the 11, which is a World Indoor Gold Meet, which is huge World Olympic ranking points. And Nadia is obviously running great, and it'd be really exciting. Even Kira Neville and you know, Phil's yet to run, and then obviously Kira McGeehan. So yeah, there's loads of different really good performances coming through, which is so exciting. I suppose Sean Tobin, Paul Robinson, I don't leave anyone out now.
All the Dublin Track Club athletes.
You're in trouble on the WhatsApp group.
Sarah, thanks a million for joining us. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much.
We look forward to following you over the next few months and hopefully at the Olympics in the summer. Thanks so much, Sarah. We're going to take a very quick break.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Just a few weeks ago, a photograph of Newbridge fighter Dylan Logan became the first ever MMA-related portrait in the National Gallery of Ireland. The photo taken backstage at Bellator Dublin in February 2020 was selected as one of the 26 shortlisted candidates for the Zurich Portrait Prize. And the photographer joins us now on the line. Statisha Moen, you're so very, very welcome. Congratulations on an absolutely fantastic photo. I know that you're just starting off your career in journalism and in photography. Can you just tell us a little bit about why you've chosen this career?
Hi, yeah. So journalism for me, it's really important because it helps give a voice to a lot of people. And I figured mixed martial arts is a very niche sport, niche enough for me anyway, because I'm only just introduced to it. And when I got into it, because I was introduced to it by Ben Kiley, I just figured this has to be photographed. And a story has to be published through this, and I love to take more pictures and write captions that tells a lot about the fighters and how they go through certain challenges.
Satisha, how do you know you've got that perfect shot? You know, like when you're snapping away there, what are you looking for?
Well, initially I was actually, well, the whole thing was actually a school assignment. It was a college assignment that I was doing in DCU. And I wanted to do a before and after of fighters. And so I was just going backstage to take a picture of the fighter, and at that time was Dylan Logan. I saw him express so earnestly about how hard he trained and how he was really disappointed how the fight didn't go a lot, you know, the way he wanted it to be. And the emotion he showed was just something that I really wanted to capture. And thankfully, there were loads of cameras and lights set up, and it just made the shot just, you know, photogenic, so to speak. So I just captured it and kept it on in my camera. I just didn't think so much of it at that time. But after that, when I showed it to my lecturer just said, no, this is it. This is the photo. You have to submit this on the Zurich Portrait Prize. You have to. Promise me that you will. And I did, and this is how far it's come.
I hope you got an A now in that assignment.
I did well.
So you're studying journalism in DCU, and what's the hope and dream for you when you finish?
Well, I do certainly hope to be a photojournalist in any realm. Being a sports photographer is something that's really new. It was my first ever sports photography. Bellator was definitely very new, and the whole sport itself was very new, so it was truly a challenge, but I had so much fun throughout the whole event, and I also fell in love with the art of MMA and how the sportsmanship are like being shown among one fighter to another, and I think this might just be a career path that I would love to be in, so hopefully there's chances to get to into this field.
Okay, well, you definitely are on the right track, just considering how good your early work is. So I'd say if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll definitely succeed. Look, Satisha, thanks so much for joining us. And I'm sure at some stage we'll be looking at your work again. Hopefully we'll have fans back in and you'll get to be doing what you love. Thanks again and best of luck. Donica, we have a competition winner.
Oh, very good. What a brilliant hamper to win all our Green Farm goodies.
I hope they give you a hamper now. You're so good at selling
it.
So Si from Wicklow is our winner. What's the answer?
The answer was France on Valentine's Day. What is more romantic than watching 46 lads from Ireland and France knocking lumps out each other?
That's what everyone's going to be doing because there's nothing else to do.
Absolutely, that's it. A massive thank you to Andrew and Laura Lee. The brilliant Blonde Tracy's up next.